Acquisition number 212950, rule 3.
Conor McFetridge, rule 3.
On the last day of January 31st, I thought it would be a boost to morale if I could pay the troops at Bull Main. The Japanese had invaded Burma by then, but were well south in Tenasserim, or so I thought. I was in a Tiger Moth or similar plane, with the battery, with the troops' pay in a bag, when the pilot indicated to me, I was a sole passenger, of course, in this Moth, that he had been recalled to base. So we returned to Rangoon, and he told me that the Japanese had overrun Moulmein, and I had four guns on the wrong side of the mighty Salween River. Moulmein is on the far side of this river. Very briefly, in the confused fighting and withdrawal at Moulmein, I lost all four guns. The Second Lieutenant Mayor Das of the battery behaved with singular gallantry, because he, when safely on a ferry boat from Salween, saw Beaufort's gun, which had been brought down to the jetty, and he chose to leave the ferry boat and go back to the gun to ensure that it had been disabled, and at least the breech block had been moved, and he was captured and became a prisoner of war for the rest of the war. I should say here that an essential element of my battery were British other ranks, all NCOs and some very fine sergeants, because the troops were so inexperienced, they had probably never seen an aircraft, some of them, until they joined the battery in October. And that a staff officer had made the decision that this battery should not be committed to war without the backing of 24 British NCOs with experience, preferably, of the Battle of Britain. And therefore, I had two British other ranks on each gun. And some of those sergeants were very fine men. I lost two sergeants, certainly, at Moulmein. Most of the Indian other ranks were saved, and very shortly, the four guns were replaced. So I then had 12 guns once more. It was then decided that 17 Indian Division on the River Satang should have one troop, and the other two troops remained on Mignadon Airfield. After a short period, a few weeks, one of those troops went up and joined 17 Division on the Satang. In early March, I became aware in Rangoon that there was an evacuation in Rangoon in progress. it seemed to me that it was quite possible I would get no orders for the withdrawal. I was in a difficult position because I came under no division or brigade. So I took it on myself to go to Army headquarters in a part of Rangoon University. And there I saw the chief gunner, whom I knew well, a brigadier. He was very upset because the decision had been made only that morning to evacuate Rangoon. I think it was a date like March the 8th, 1942. And indeed, when I appeared and said, I wanted orders, please, he told me to wait, and he would go to the G1 Ops staff officer and get the requisite orders for me. He returned and told me that the troop guarding Rangoon Harbour, there was a troop by then guarding Rangoon Harbour, that it should move from Rangoon to Tarawade. And at Tarawade, I would receive further orders. And he said the other two troops by then were within 17 Division on the River Setang. Now, the story of the Setang Bridge has been told often, but I had told the troop commanders there that they were not to place guns on the wrong side of the bridge. That was one of my wise decisions, but quite contrary to all rules governing anti-aircraft gunnery. Nevertheless, the guns in 17th Division were retiring after Setang and Pigo. At Pigo, there was one of the best anti-aircraft battles ever, I think. During one afternoon, the troop at Pigo brought down four Japanese aircraft. And the Japanese aircraft were very active in the air at this period. They appeared quite fearless as to what height they flew at. And they really were very good targets for Beaufort's guns. So you had the picture on the day that there was one troop on the main road pulling out towards Tarawade and Prome, and there were two troops, but they already had lost guns because Beaufort's guns, the tires were in those days not what they call run flat tires, and if they got a bullet through the tire, you couldn't move the entire gun. That was ridiculous, really, and certainly one gun had to be left because of that. And then one gun was ambushed by the Japanese when it was moving in by night into a box or lager of the 7th Hussars, and it was ambushed by the Japanese, so there were two guns lost. The subaltern next morning, Lieutenant Nash, found himself leading three Beaufort's guns out ahead of a squadron of the 7th Hussars, when he suddenly saw the ambush gun lying by the roadside. What was he to do about it? There appeared to be no gun detachment, and no gun detachment was ever found. But the gun was loaded, and so he, without a hesitation, mounted the Beaufort's platform, and he rammed around down the barrel, and he was able to, the gun was already loaded, and he was able to fire the gun. He tells me that the round that was rammed down the barrel went off into the air hole, as far as he could see, But there he was, standing alone on the very platform, but the round fired by him detonated and tore away the whole of the front of the muzzle, and therefore he disabled the gun in this way. Well, it was undoubtedly a very foolhardy and brave action, and that was Second Lieutenant L.L. Nash. Well, then I found myself at Tarawade with 10 guns. I had lost two in the retreat of 17 Div. I should add that my troop from Rangoon was in the long column of vehicles leaving Rangoon when it was held by a roadblock of the Japanese, and General Alexander himself spent a very comfortable night at Chaukyan. I might add here, of course, that Sitang, Pigu, and Chaukyan are all battle honors of the Burma campaign, so they weren't mere minor skirmishes or actions. And this was the first taste of war of a battery formed only 4 months earlier. At Tarawade, I had 10 guns, and I had orders for, quite rightly, as to how I should deploy them. The orders were out of date because they assumed that I had 12 guns, and I did deploy the guns in this manner. I decided that 17th Division was the real division who would fight this out. After all, Birdie, the 2nd Division, how can you continue fighting when the enemy occupy your homes and are and your families and dear ones are in the hands of the enemy? I saw no future for Burdiv, and I allocated Burdiv only 2 guns, and they were both lost at Yen and Yang.
Burdiv.
And both those guns fought gallantly, but were lost at Yen and Yang. I should say here that one troop was to be on the LFC, and that went to the Mingi Bridge, and later had 2 guns on the Ava Bridge, and those guns were under Lieutenant Sawyer. This left 4 guns with 17 Indian Division. Those guns had a very tough campaign, and they were at Tung Wing Ji with 17 Division. The 2 officers, 2nd Lieutenants Nash and Weber, had the unique experience of hearing on the BBC News, on the wireless sets, they heard that their Bofors guns had shot down a Japanese bomber during the last 24 hours. This was quite true. And they listened to the BBC News for this. Then from Tung Wunji, there was an extraordinary battle at Moniwa. At Moniwa, the general commanding Burdiv turned round to his gunner at his headquarters and said, look at the river. Those are enemy barges. What can you do about them? He turned round to the mountain battery commander. And the mountain battery commander was working out his fire orders. And to his astonishment, and he's a good friend of mine to this day, he and the general both saw the barges under heavy fire. And this heavy fire came from one of my guns on the banks of the river. And the general duly credited my friend with the lightning response of the mountain battery. In fact, this was my battery engaging over open sights the enemy in barges. And they apparently inflicted considerable damage. The mountain battery commander thanked me profusely for it. We then moved in the retreat. We, that is the troop on the Mingy Bridge and Arva Bridge, which had been on the LFC the whole time, and the surviving guns moved to through Shui Bo and to Shui Jin. Now Shui Jin is on the River Chinwin on the east bank. At this time, I myself had followed the campaign, and I realized that the retreat of the army in Burma would be through Shui Jin. From Shui Jin, there ran river boats to Kalewa, which is some 6 miles upstream, but because of a big curve in the river there, it is nearer 10 miles upstream. I, of my own account, did a reconnaissance. I was absolutely appalled at the road, and I thought I'd be very lucky if I got any Beaufort's guns to Shui Jin. But Shui Jin was surely to be the Dunkirk of this small army in Burma, and all equipment would have to be jettisoned at Shui Jin. I could not see the equipment being loaded on the small jetty and put onto a river boat and then cross the River Chinwin onto Kalewa on the far side. I returned from my reconnaissance and told my Brigadier Welshman at General Slim's headquarters, at Corps headquarters. Brigadier Welshman immediately took me in to be interviewed by General Slim. General Slim listened to my description of the road, and I said I could not see 3-ton lorries or tractors of field guns or Beaufort's guns getting to Shui Jin, as it was. General Slim listened to me with rapt attention. I think I was very lucky that I wasn't reprimanded. This couldn't have happened in Europe, that a sole battery commander should reconnoiter the route of retreat. I General Slim took the phone and he summoned his CRE and his G1 ops to him at once. And I left. I cannot but think that General Slim took swift action because the road was so vastly improved during the next week before military vehicles began the journey to Shuai Jin. I appreciated that it was vital to get as many light anti-aircraft, that is Bofors guns, of my battery to Shuai Jin. And I had reconnoitred what the layout of the guns should be. As the troops retired, I went and reconnoitred the last 20 miles myself again. But by the time I had returned to the two troops, the road was, Alexander writes that in his dispatch that he cannot think how any MT ever reached Shuai Jin. The road was really atrocious and very difficult, which it was along the bed of a chong, that is a river course. And if a vehicle went over the edge, it went down to the body, it went down to the bottom of the river bed. Well, in the journey, in that bit of road, and I frankly thought I'd be very lucky if I got four guns there, and I did just get four guns. Brigadier Welshman had advised me to defy all rules as to how anti-aircraft guns should be deployed and to put them, three guns, close together like field guns. And this was done on a track which led immediately to the jetty on the Chinwin. It was about 200 yards from the jetty. And there were three guns on the floor. I was lucky that I had these three guns. Now, the weapon of the artillery is not the gun. I was very conscious of this during the retreat. The weapon of the artillery is the shell. I have been told from other sources and even from the Japanese that they were astounded at the ammunition that I had at Shuai Jin. Well, before leaving Rangoon, I had determined that it'd be quite impossible to train any ranks, British or Indian or anyone, to operate the predictor of the Bofors gun. A Bofors gun consists of the predictor cable, which links it to the gun dials. You have to have a charging set and batteries. So ancillary equipment for each gun occupied a Bofors, occupied a 3-ton lorry. I could not see it ever being used, and of my own account, without consulting higher authority, I determined to send back these 12 predictors and so acquire 12 3-ton lorries to India. I charged the battery captain that he was not to return from the docks with this equipment, because I wanted the 12 3-ton lorries filled with ammunition for the rest of the campaign. And so I can say that the guns never ran short of ammunition. And all ranks were very conscious about ammunition. I had foreseen a few weeks ahead that Shui Jin was to be the Dunkirk beach for the army in Burma. On the morning of May the 10th, when the guns had been deployed, where the road was so difficult that one gun didn't come in until 24 hours later than the other, so the guns were in position at Shui Jin 3 days before the third gun struggled into action with a British officer, Second Lieutenant Knights, and it was fitted in alongside the two already deployed. On the morning of May the 10th, I realized that in the darkness and in the very early hours of the morning that the Japanese were attacking the guards on the hills overlooking the ferry. These features were absolutely vital if the ferry boat was to occupy. And I realized that the surviving companies, only two companies of the 1st 9th Jarts, were already exchanging fire with the enemy. I knew that they were to be relieved that morning by the 7th Gurkhas. And the 7th Gurkhas at this stage of the withdrawal consisted of survivors of the 1st 7th and the 3rd 7th battalions. It is very difficult to command and manage an amalgam of two different regiments. And when I said was wondering what firepower I could raise, I asked the colonel, who was the relieving force of the Jarts, I asked him how many mortars and where were they? And he said, I cannot tell you how many mortars I have, because I could well understand this at the time, because really he was commanding the remnants of two battalions. But I saw Colonel Godley commanding the 9th Jarts speaking very earnestly to the 7th Gurkhas arriving by lorry to relieve him. And the gist of what Colonel Godley of the Jarts and Colonel Williams of the 7th Gurkhas were saying was, this is no question of the 7th Gurkhas relieving you, this is a question of reinforcing you. And Godley agreed, and Williams asked, well, if you wish to give orders to my battalion, please do it through me, but I unreservedly place them under your command. And Godley fought the battle of Shui Jin. I intervened and said to the two colonels, I have three Bofors guns on the floor here, and I am a mountain gunner from the frontier. And Godley exclaimed, thank God for that. I had to tell him that I had no communications whatsoever. Bofors guns don't have the communications, and infantry officers think mountain artillery have the tops in communications, are the best. But Godley was unruffled, and he said to me, well, where are the guns? And I pointed it out to him, and he said to me, I place my headquarters next to your guns. Now, Godley used the guns throughout the battle as being the match winners, absolutely match winners. Through it. Well.